The Paddy Power Half Hour on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.
This is the Paddy Power Half Hour on Off the Ball. You can tune into us on our streams and on our social channels at Off the Ball on Twitter, on Facebook, on YouTube, and you can also listen to us on Off the Ball Radio. John Duggan with you, with Enda Call and with Kieran Bradley, soccer men, real football men, guys.
Proper football men, John. You know
football
that.
Men, not soccer men. Yeah.
How are you?
Soccer's very American. I'm good, guys. Just remember that our football coverage is brought to you with thanks to Paddy Power. And for more information on responsible gambling, visit dunlewy.net. I'm really excited about the Premier League this weekend. Spurs, Manchester City on Sunday. Liverpool playing at 3 o'clock tomorrow against Wolves. Man United, Wolves. Liverpool, Southampton, isn't it? That's it. I'm getting ahead of myself here. The week that we've had, I suppose the club that's still dominating the headlines and is yours, Manchester United, Bruno Fernandes signing, the League Cup defeat, Ed Woodward, unsavoury scenes around that. But Fernandes, are you excited about it? 47 million. Is he going to add a lot to Old Trafford and what United are about now?
Well, he's going to have to.
Yeah.
Because he's coming into United and probably in recent memory, the player that had the most expectation on his shoulders has been Bruno Fernandes in the last couple of years. Maybe Di Maria topped that when he came in under Louis van Gaal. And he's being pegged as the saviour, the messiah. He's going to come in and sort out this United midfield. And I don't think it's as simple as that. United still have a lot of issues in the centre midfield without McTominay when he's out injured. Pogba hasn't been fit all year. Fred has been improving. And you have to imagine he's going to bring something to that side, because we saw against Man City, the biggest thing that I saw that was the difference between the two sides was just passing, simple passing, being able to keep the ball. Man City, you saw them when they got the ball, they were passing, moving, their triangles going everywhere. Every time somebody had the ball, there was another option on. United got the ball and they kicked it straight back to Man City straight away because they didn't have anybody that was brave enough to take the ball. And Bruno Fernandes, from what I've heard, I saw him playing for Portugal a few years ago as well. He is that type of player that he's confident enough that even when the game's going against you, he wants the ball, he'll take the ball and he'll try to create something.
Do you think it's a good move for United, or is it a panacea? Is it something that is a positive step? What's your view on this here?
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, the problem is that when you look at any of Manchester United's business of late, it seems that there's no real plan in place, as you would
see. Is there a plan here?
I'm not sure. Well, I mean, Fernandes has been linked at least since he was scouted, I think, at the beginning of last year. So he's obviously been in the mind for quite a while, but United were briefing over the summer that they weren't interested to close United journalists. So there's obviously a bit of kind of question over that. But I think in terms of what he brings to the side, I think it's actually a very good signing from, look, admittedly, I don't think any of us have seen an enormous amount of him, but he's got a great passing range. Oftentimes United's movement off the ball can be a little bit questionable, but oftentimes it's actually very good, and it just requires someone who's able to break the lines a little bit. United have been looking for both a number 10 and a midfielder that can play kind of on the half turn and take the ball and, as you say, under kind of demand players, you know, get in the right position. So, you know what, it's exciting, and United have a lot of money. So if it doesn't go their way, I'm sure they'll be able to sort it out in the future.
6-5 against Wolves tomorrow in the Premier League is a 5:30 kickoff at Old Trafford. Wolves 12-5, 9-4 the draw. I like Wolves, good exciting footballing team. I love Traore, I love Jimenez. Could be exciting tomorrow.
Yeah, they've caused United a lot of trouble in the past. It's been a very good game the last couple of games between United and Wolves. They went head-to-head in the FA Cup, but ended in a draw, and then United just pipped them to the post in the replay. So these two sides, and if you look at the record speaks for themselves how close they are. United are only ahead of them by, they have one extra win on the table compared to them. Wolves, you'd think, are probably in a better position than most people would imagine they would be in the, when they first came into the Premier League, but they've really cemented themselves as a top seven side at least, and a side that are looking to make that breakthrough like Tottenham did a few years ago into the top four.
So you don't see Traore or Jimenez looking around to leave?
I don't know why they would.
It's funny because as a Manchester United fan, I would absolutely love United to sign Jimenez. I think he's a fantastic striker that offers so much. He can hold up the ball. He's great in the air. He's really powerful, great finisher. But I mean, for the moment, obviously, with the Mendes ties, both of them, I believe, are Mendes clients, Drury perhaps not. But they've got a project going there, and it's all going in the right direction. I mean, I was thinking, actually, I was watching the Liverpool game the other night, and Neto, Pedro Neto, is an unbelievable player. I actually think that'll be an interesting little battle down United's left and Wolves' right, taking on Brandon Williams and or Luke Shaw, depending on who's there. He's a fantastic little player too. So they've got a great deal of options. Even Morgan Gibbs-White, the young lad coming through, every time I see him, there's a lot of kind of young English talents that are technically adept, and he's another one in that mode. So they've got a lot of options.
As for Traore as well, I think there's only probably two coaches in the world that are going to develop him any further than Nuno has, and that's Klopp or Pep.
Yeah.
So that's his step up. I think he's definitely good enough. He's definitely a player that you think if he goes into a Man City side under Pep Guardiola or a Liverpool side under Klopp, he's going to take that leap up even further, like Raheem Sterling did when he was when he made his move to City. I know it took him about a year to adapt to Pep Guardiola's style, but now look at him.
Yeah.
Pep has coached him in such a way that he knows what his strengths are, knows that he's not going to be great he's not great on one-on-ones, he doesn't have the best shooting, but he knows that if he gets into the right position, he is an easy tap-in, and that's what Pep has brought to his game. So you'd have to think that Adama Traore would do that as well.
And it's funny because it's kind of the balance of Traore playing for Liverpool, you can see almost tomorrow happening because he just perfectly suits that kind of style. But from what I've heard about Traore in the past is that he requires a great deal of coaching. I mean, Pulis told that story of when he was at, Borough? Yeah, so he had him on one side of the pitch in one half so that Pulis could coach him from the sideline, and when it would be the second half, he'd switch him to the other side so we could kind of coach him along. So it'll be really interesting to see where he goes.
It's the Paddy Power Half Hour here on Off the Ball, and it's transfer deadline day, 11 o'clock tonight. Aidan McGeady's got a Charlton, can you believe it, from Sunderland on loan. Also, Cedric Suarez to Arsenal on loan from Southampton. Cedric Suarez for Arsenal.
It's a good signing.
Yeah.
Good. It's an interesting one. He's a really good right back. But so is Hector Bellerin, so you have to kind of, it's hard to see where he's going to fit into the first team unless Mikel Arteta plans on playing a three at the back with Suarez in the centre of that, as opposed to on the right wing. So it's more of a cementing places on the bench and getting a stronger squad in place for me.
I think he's actually the perfect kind of style of signing for Arsenal to be getting here. He's 28, he's coming from a team lower in the Premier League. He's going to kind of think, you know what, I'm going to have to play up to be playing at right back for Arsenal here. Bellerin's obviously had a good deal of injury problems over the last 18 months or so, so they'll be looking for a pretty solid professional. And I think they've done a really good bit of business there. I'm actually very impressed.
Yeah, it seems like Ryan Bennett's on his way to Leicester from Wolves, also on transfer deadline day. Atletico Madrid re-signing Yannick Carrasco, the Belgian winger from the Chinese side, Dalian Yifang, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. McGeady didn't really seem to work out with him and Phil Parkinson of late at Sunderland, but Charlton, Lee Bowyer is actually, I never thought Lee Bowyer would be a manager, but he's proved himself, and Aidan McGeady might do a job there.
He's a big fan of the Irish players because he was linked with Troy Parrott and Adamida as well in this transfer window, so he obviously fancies McGeady as a professional. I thought Aidan McGeady came out quite well in the Sunderland Till I Die documentary. Like he was there. He was just like, why would I leave? Like I'm here for so many years. I've gone down with this club, but Aidan McGeady is one of those players that he'll always be that mercurial kind of winger who. He can turn it on like that, but sometimes he just doesn't turn up. And
Paddy McCourt.
Like Paddy McCourt, you know, if you want to throw in a rugby reference, like Finn Russell for Scotland, like he's a phenomenal player when he turns it on, but he just doesn't turn it on often enough. And it's a good move for him at the end of his career to get that step up back into the championship.
Well, neither Finn Russell nor Aidan McGeady will be at the Aviva Stadium tomorrow. But no, we will be here for Off the Ball for Scotland, Ireland. Just letting you know about Acca Insurance on the Paddy Power Half Hour. Money back is a free bet if one leg of your fourfold same game multi lets you down. So terms and conditions applying to top Irish, UK, Euro and senior international football. A max free bet of €10 per day. Terms and conditions apply. I'm looking at the odds here, guys. The early game tomorrow, 12:30, Leicester against Chelsea, third against fourth. Leicester 7-5, the draw 5-2, Chelsea 17-10. Both clubs are trending a little bit down at the moment. You know, those poor defeats for Leicester against Burnley and Southampton. Then, like, that was a bit of a kick in the teeth losing to Villa during the week for them. A cup final on the offing, yeah.
Especially under Brendan Rodgers when they're fighting for top four. And top four is nice. It's great to get it, but for a player, for him to build over the next couple of years, just getting that first piece of silverware could have acted as sort of a sliding doors moment for that club to take another step up and actually be a club that's fighting for the Premier League title again. They are missing Jamie Vardy a little bit. He isn't 100% fit for this game as well. Might make an appearance off the bench, but he hasn't scored in January either, so they're missing his run of form. I thought Barnes has been quite good for Leicester over the last couple of weeks, and Ayoze Perez has popped up as well. So they have a couple of players who can get you those goals. And in this game where Chelsea might not have Tammy Abraham, it's probably the perfect opportunity for Leicester to get more points on the board, to be honest.
Yeah, it's also looking like Wilfred Ndidi will be back for Leicester, which is a big thing for Leicester, because obviously Choudhury is a very good player, very good young player, and kind of there was talk of him maybe making a burst for the England team, England squad for the Euros, but he struggled a little bit the last few weeks. So that's huge. I think there'll be goals in this game. I really do think that, because it's been a bit helter-skelter. Leicester's home form is very good. Chelsea's away form generally is very good, although they are inconsistent. I did back them to lose against Newcastle a few weeks ago, and they have it in them still. There's a little bit of kind of fragility there.
Yeah, the fragility, like Leicester, I think conceded I'm just looking at the stats here, 11 goals in their opening 17 games, now 13 in their last 7. And Chelsea have conceded 11 in the last 15 minutes, a joint equal with Villa. So there is a degree of porousness when we're talking about these two teams. Has Frank Lampard done if you're a Chelsea fan, has Frank Lampard done a good job? I know that a lot of there's a focus on at the moment on Solskjaer United, but would people be happy with Lampard?
I think in general they are, because they knew they were going to be shoe-strapped into this. But I suppose what people don't really realise is how good those Chelsea players were. Like, there's a reason clubs wanted to get those Chelsea players on loan in the first place, and when they brought them back, they really do have a good squad there of young players who are going to be great going forward. I think now Ruben Loftus-Cheek is coming back. He was back in training during the week. Once they get him, they're going to be a seriously dangerous outfit again. At the back, they are lax, and Frank Lampard has highlighted that as one of the issues. He said, I think after the game against Newcastle, he said, "I'm just sick of them not paying attention for the whole game," and that is a big issue for them. One of the issues I've found with him recent has been Kepa and goals. He hasn't been strong enough. He reminded me of a bit of a young David De Gea coming through when he first signed. Really small frame, not great in the air, but a good shot stopper. So you think he might bulk up over the next couple of years, but he hasn't done that yet. And it's something he's going to need to do, because we saw with the Newcastle goal, that's what happened. He came out and he flapped at it, didn't get a good connection on it, and Newcastle got in for the goal. So that's been an issue for them in the last couple of games, and he needs to get his confidence back.
I just wonder actually how much due diligence they did on Kepa beforehand. No, I'm not presuming they didn't do any, but...
Well, I don't think Mario Tsiosari would be happy with him.
Well, I'm amazed he stayed at the club in the first place after that.
Yeah, I know that was pretty embarrassing all told, but Kepa seemed like a little bit of a panic buy given where Courtois was going, and they were kind of backed into that corner. I think with Chelsea more generally, Lampard's been been banging the drum about just finishing chances, because they've been creating a lot, but they've been nowhere near clinical enough. And if Abraham's there, it's looking a little less likely. I'm not sure what the exact situation with Giroud is at the moment. Giroud's obviously been making overtures to go either to Inter or Lazio, have been linked today, and they probably won't have someone.
Or Tottenham. Could have actually.
Oh, really?
They could go to Tottenham. Yeah.
Is that the new William Gallas? He's just going everywhere. All the London clubs.
He's the new Piontek.
Went to Hertha Berlin.
It seems. I'm looking at the other odds as well today, folks, for the Premier League tomorrow, the kind of the shoulder games. We'll get on to Liverpool at the in a minute, and with Manchester City playing Spurs on Sunday. But it's an interesting odd. Bournemouth, even money to beat Aston Villa. Villa 12-5, the away team, and Bournemouth, the draw 5-2. I thought Villa's price, given the way they've turned it around in recent weeks, nearly 2.5-1 was decent.
Yeah, I suppose.
Bournemouth are lacking confidence, and maybe Eddie Howe's been there too long. Listen to the same voice. I know Callum Wilson's broken his duck, but
one last time out, I suppose.
Well, no. Bournemouth are one of these sides, though. You don't know how they're going to get on. I suppose the price maybe reflects Aston Villa playing during the week.
Yeah,
they might be a bit tired, and they left a lot out in the field, so it's hard to know where they're going to go. It's going to be a massive game. This is what they call a nine-pointer, or a six-pointer,
whatever, 12-pointer,
whatever you want to say. Either way, whichever one of these sides is going to be who loses is going to be in serious issues. Mm. And Bournemouth look to be selling Joshua King today, whether that's the United or not. Eddie Howe is a little bit skeptical about it. He said he didn't know. It's out of his hands. So that sounds like he's going somewhere, whether that's United or not. It's another thing. So if they sell him, it's another one of their strike force gone. But defensively is where they have their issues. So if Jack Grealish can get in behind that defence, he'll do.
He's the one that got away, not Rice. So Grealish is the one that got away.
He's a phenomenal player. I think he's.
And he's grown up as well, I think.
Yeah, he's a brilliant player.
He's completely taken the mantle on at Villa as the main man when they were down in the Championship. I have a few mates who are Villa season ticket holders, and they're just absolutely in love with him. I don't remember a kind of relationship like that with Villa fans for quite a while. But
he's like a street footballer. He's like a footballer to the past that creates a creative player. We have a lot of brilliant players in the Premier League, but they're all machines.
Yeah,
this guy's got a bit of.
He's a bit mercurial. He's a little. His close control is amazing. Like, he just goes on these mazes. Fantastic. And I actually think that if we're looking at the price for Villa, you can either look at the Villa midweek game in that they'll be a bit tired, or they'll just be
euphoric.
On a high. And I just think actually that's the kind of atmosphere that Grealish will flourish in. So I fancy Grealish actually to get a goal.
You just don't want it to be a season where Aston Villa get to a League Cup final and they're relegated.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter. Like, they have a tough game against Man City. They're probably not going to win it. And getting to a cup final, it means nothing if you go back into the Championship.
Well, you know how hard it is to get out of the Championship with Leeds, the way they've taken years to get. They're still not up. The other games, the shoulder games tomorrow, Crystal Palace 21-10 against Sheffield United. Sheffield United 6-4, the draw 2-1. Newcastle against Norwich. Steve Bruce used to play for Norwich. 5-4, Newcastle. And Norwich 23-10. 23-10, the draw. Got a little bit of Newcastle at the moment. I love their character. They've been like Steve Bruce, I believe, just written them off, and they're going to stay up.
Yeah, they are. And like I think this game particularly, Norwich are, well, they're consistently bad, but they're inconsistent, let's say. And they're missing now Cantwell and Buendia, who I would say are their two, you know, most prolific players outside of Pukki. So that's looking like very bad news for them. Newcastle have signed pretty well in the transfer window, I think, as well. Kind of low-key, you know yourself, John, with Danny Rose. Like,
he's actually good that Danny Rose left Spurs. He wasn't happy there.
Yeah.
I think that's low-key one of the best signings in this transfer window, because they needed a left-back, Newcastle, and you're getting a top four, top five left back there in Danny Rose. I know he's probably not in his peak anymore, but
he can still do it.
He can still do it, and he's still getting up and down that left wing very well. So with him and Matt Ritchie now on that left wing, Newcastle are a decent enough outfit. Especially, I really like Saint-Maximin. He kind of reminds me of Adama Traore a few years ago, because he's so good with the ball, so good at dribbling, but just a little bit lax in his final decision making. So if somebody can get a hand of him and coach him the same way as Adama Traore has been coached, then he could be a great player.
Well, the one that interests me is Bentaleb, because he's been
another former Spurs boy.
Exactly, yeah. Well, that's it.
And the shirt's under the thing. It's under the shirt's under.
he's kept the bias under wraps today. It'll be interesting to see how that goes, because apparently he's had a lot of disciplinary issues at Schalke. There's been a few suspensions from the club for his behaviour. So hopefully they can get that under wraps, because there's a bit of a player under there as well, and they're low-key putting together a reasonable squad.
Was it Bentaleb that didn't turn up for training in the last transfer window?
I'm not sure.
Top of the mind, sure, I think it may have been. Awesome. May not be.
West Ham United against Brighton. We're talking about 15 pointers now. We're not even at six. We're at 15 pointers. Not even. West Ham 6-4. Brighton 9-5. The Dolly Parton bet. West Ham 23-10. I saw Brighton against Palace before Christmas. I went to Selhurst Park. I thought they were very tidy. I liked Aaron Moy, liked the look of him, but they've struggled in the last few games. West Ham, though, are even worse. Yeah. What has Moyes added since Pellegrini left? I'm not seeing it.
Nothing. He's added nothing to the team. It's amazing that he took the job. Like, it was...
We're given the job by the Sullivan and Gold.
I think it's perfectly understandable.
I know why he took it. You're always going to take a Premier League management job, but I don't know why West Ham gave it to him. Yeah. But what's amazing is just this relegation battle, because we've mentioned three or four games now, and depending on how those results go, it's going to be a completely different situation for that club. Like, if West Ham lose, they're going to be in a dogged relegation battle. But if Brighton lose, they're down into the relegation zone now. So I think they're 2 points off the relegation zone at this point. And they're not scoring enough goals despite them playing good football. They're not good enough at the back. So it's going to be a difficult one for Graham Potter to turn that ship around. But this is probably the best game they can get against a West Ham team who are devoid of any confidence.
I think West Ham's very toxic at the minute. The fan base is not happy. They're not happy with the owners. Haven't been for
the stadium
a long time.
Is a stadium disaster.
Is an absolute.
I was in the stadium earlier on this season, and it's difficult to get to. It isn't well set up for a new stadium. It's impossible to get in and out because they only have three entrances into the stadium. So everyone's going in the same way. And then you're just sitting so far away from the pitch. I thought it was a joke when people were talking about how far away, but you would need your glasses on to watch the game.
Yeah, and this is a key game for West Ham because their run of fixtures for the next few games is really, really difficult. They've got the likes of Arsenal, Wolves, etc. So this is a massive one. And to be honest, I don't see them getting anything.
They're a club that just keeps on getting relegated. They get relegated a lot West Ham. They come up, they come down. Well, the FA Cup is a second division club back in 1980. The Zedcars game, Watford against Everton. 7-4 Watford, Everton 13-8, 9-4 the draw. You know why I'm calling this a Zedcars game, don't you?
Certainly do. Both teams come out to it. Ender doesn't know what the Z cars is or what it could potentially be. Don't know if it's an actual car or
it was a cop TV series in the like late 60s, early 70s.
And, we'll give them a rendition.
it was before my time, I think.
They both come for whatever bizarre reason. They both come out to it. Watford Everton also repeated the 1984 FA Cup final. Once again, Watford struggling. What won from bottom? 23 points. Everton, Ancelotti, I just find it like a twice European Cup winning manager, and he's ended up at Everton. I think there's going to be money coming into Everton with Moshiri and Usmanov going in there. I wouldn't write Everton off as a club that will be investing more and more. I know they've invested badly the last few years, but when they moved to Bramley Dock and all that, they're a club that I think could be dark horses regarding being around the top six and even better than that in a few years' time.
Yeah, look, I think they're probably too good to go down this year.
Watford?
Watford have really improved in the last couple of weeks. They're scoring goals again, which is good.
Troy Deeney.
Again, like Everton, I think their squad is too good to get relegated. They were in a European spot last year, or almost there. So I think they're going to have enough to stay up. This looks like a game that it's probably going to have goals. Whether it's going to end up in a Watford win or Everton win, I don't think it's probably going to go for a draw in this one, I would say.
Yeah, my flatmate's a Watford fan.
You have a lot of fans with connections.
Oh, listen.
You've got a big Rolodex.
Bit of a face around these parts. no, but I mean, so I've been exposed to a lot of their matches, and even when they were kind of rock bottom, they were better than their league table position was showing. So it's nice to see Pearson injecting a little bit of discipline and belief into the squad. Tomorrow, I think Ismail Assar's missing, which is big because he's really started to turn it on since joining from Rennes in the summer. Everton are Everton. They're inconsistent. They are frustrating, unbelievably frustrating if you're an Everton fan. So I would think that Watford will come out on top narrowly on this. You just don't know which Everton's going to turn up.
Is Richarlison an Everton player? Is he a Barcelona player?
He's not an 85 million player. I think it's crazy.
Is that true?
It's still being floated that's the fee.
Agents involved in the newspapers.
I did see that recently across the five top leagues in Europe that he has been involved in the most goals for a player under the age of 21. Just comes in behind the likes of Mbappe and that. So he does have potential, but 85 million for Richarlison at this point is crazy money. And if you're Tottenham or Everton even, and you're looking to rebuild, like you said, they're looking to spend money, that 85 million could buy a lot of good players.
Absolutely.
Yeah, especially if they got good scouting. Don't know if Marcel Brands has had the best record, to be generous.
They need a striker. That 85 million could go out and buy you
Well, St. Tosin didn't work out, did he?
No. But they keep buying these strikers that never really work. Like, they're buying strikers who are hot and cold. They need to buy one that is like a Jimenez who's going to do it every single year.
A Bob Latchford or a Graham Sharp or a Paul Rideout.
Danny Cotty.
Exactly. Liverpool. The champions elect 9-2 against Southampton, 11-1, 5-1 the draw at Anfield. Only dropped 2 points all season. How good are this Liverpool team?
Excellent.
Move on.
I don't. I mean, they're breaking records right left and centre. We were actually discussing last week.
Will they get beaten soon?
I don't think so. Actually, I was looking through the remainder of their fixtures. There's a couple in there. I think they have Wolves coming up in the next couple of weeks. Sorry, that's gone. I can't see one coming up anytime soon that's making me think about it.
Like, that Madrid? Form,
that's probably one they'll struggle with. But in the league, they've beaten everyone this year.
Yeah.
So it's hard to see who's going to beat them. It's not going to be Southampton. I remember the glory days of Liverpool when... this was Liverpool A's versus Liverpool B's, and they no longer have to buy players off Southampton because they're that good. That's where they are at the minute. And the gulf between these two sides is going to be vast at the weekend. I know Southampton are in good run of form, but they're missing quite a few players. They're missing Vestergaard, Long, Armstrong, who's been brilliant for them in midfield in recent games, is out injured as well. So it's going to be a struggle for Southampton.
They're fantastic. I mean, they're just a brilliant side to watch.
They've done all this without Fabinho as well, because he was seen as really the fulcrum.
Absolutely.
Before he got injured, and hasn't seemed to have made any difference.
And Kenny Cunningham on OTBAM was making the point that actually, and this was before Henderson went into the role, he's like, no, Henderson's better at that job. And he's dropped him back, and he's been fantastic. I think he's a shout for player of the season, to be honest. So we'll see how it goes. I mean, I sincerely hope they go on a run of losing the next 10 games, but I imagine that's probably not going to happen anytime soon.
Sunday, we're looking at two matches. Tottenham Hotspur against Manchester City, 4:30 at the new White Hart Lane. Spurs 9-2, that's pretty sorry stuff. Manchester City 2-1 on with Paddy Power, and 7-2 the draw. Have Tottenham got a prayer, a hope in hell?
I think they do, at home.
Why?
At home against Man City. Man City aren't unbelievable this year. Going into this game, it ties into the Liverpool game. Going into this game against Tottenham, they could be 21 points behind Liverpool. So they don't have a league to fight for at this stage. And Tottenham, who need to get those wins in to try get up to Champions League place, they need a win here. And it's going to be interesting to see now if anything changes now that Eriksen, once that saga is done, dusted out of the way, let's see how the new transfers come in and get on. Lo Celso has signed a new deal to keep him permanent at the club. So
Bergwijn's joined from PSV.
He was linked with Manchester United a lot over the last 18 months, so I kind of had a little look at him. I just wonder whether it's exactly what they need at the moment. The talk, obviously, over the transfer window was some form of replacement for Harry Kane. I mean, that frustrates Ireland.
They need a defender, yeah. I think, a left-back as well, and a right-back.
They certainly do now. Like, both the wing-back positions look really...
Mourinho is kind of... got fond of Aurier, but he's always capable of a real headless decision in a match. Also, Ben Davies has been injured. And who's going to be that creative spark that after Eriksen going? Maybe Lo Celso will be the guy. I don't know. Manchester City, though, I know they lost the other night, but they were decent at times. And against Villa, they were amazing. I still think they're capable of really turning it on. You know?
I've no doubt that they are one of the best clubs in Europe at the minute. They're just... they've just been a victim of how good Liverpool have been this year.
And also as a sloppy defence, this Fernandinho thing.
If you lose Emerick Laporte and don't have a replacement ready to go, you're going to struggle.
With unlimited money.
It is insane. It's probably the one blind spot they've had. But, I mean, they were linked with Kalla Soyuncu from Leicester, decided against it. I think the fact is, in the summer, they're going to be going big for maybe two centre-halves. Because Otamendi is out of the club and there's questions over John Stones, so that we might see a very different defence next season.
Arsenal 10-11, so they're odds on against Burnley. The draw 5-2, 11-4 for Burnley, who've had a couple of good results recently. How do you see that going, lads?
Arsenal could struggle here with Burnley's aerial dominance. We've said that a couple of times this year and it turns out to be true. Burnley aren't in a great run of form at the minute, so it's going to be a tight one. If I was going, it's the type of game that Arsenal will lose, in my opinion. They don't really have the bottle for it yet. And if Burnley turn it on and bring the game to them, like Sean Dyche likes his team to do, then Arsenal may not be able to cope with them.
I'll go score draw. I think Burnley will cause problems for him, but I can't see them getting a win. They're not great.
Just give you some special odds on Paddy Power before we finish up here. Bruno Fernandes to get injured before appearing for Manchester United, 16-1. Richarlison to leave Everton for a fee higher than 100 million. End of calls, told you it's not going to happen. 10-1 in this window, but 9-4 in the future. And the future can deliver strange things. Man United to score from a set piece is 10-1 against Wolves.
That's not going to happen. Well, it might happen now that Bruno Fernandes is there, but if Fred's still on them, it's not going to happen.
Oh, that was so frustrating. So frustrating.
So the bet of the weekend, guys, is?
The weekend. I'm going to go with an Aston Villa win.
Aston Villa win at?
At Bournemouth.
12-5 for Villa.
I will go Leicester to beat Chelsea, both teams to score.
7-5, and we'll probably have a little bit of enhanced odds on that with Paddy Power. This has been the Paddy Power Half Hour. Hope you've enjoyed it on our social channels, at Off The Ball on Twitter. Remember also football between 1 and 5 on Off The Ball tomorrow. And our football coverage brought to you thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, visit dunlewy.net. The Paddy Power Half Hour, back next Friday from midday.
The Paddy Power Half Hour on Off The Ball.
With Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.